Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. I'm Heather Choate here with Mark Johnston. Hope you guys are having a fabulous day. And how are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing wonderful. How about yourself?
Doing good. Feeling well rested, excited for spring, settling into the routine, just doing life. It's a beautiful thing. How about you?
Yeah, we've been, I almost feel bad to admit this, especially with things going on. We were noticing that a lot of more people were a little bit more open for social engagements. So we had a whole bunch of social engagements over the weekend. Don't turn me in, people. I don't know how it is around where you are, Heather, but I think around here, there's still a lot of hesitation with stuff like that. We still have a bunch of stuff closed in Pennsylvania. So there's a little bit of this, like, okay, can I invite you? Are you going to like judge me if I invite you over to my place or not? And things like that going on.
It's different all throughout the country. Colorado is a little, you know, polarized. but like I went to Kansas and Florida, definitely different experiences there. So, but yeah, grateful for the progress that we're making. So yeah, as far as the pandemic goes. All right, so today we're going to be talking about four vital things you must do to save your marriage. Now, I know a lot of you, some of you are joining us live on Facebook, so hi, we can see you and welcome. For those who are listening to the recording, we always stream these live on Facebook, and you might notice it's not like the most professional, clean podcast ever, but Mark and I actually prefer to keep it raw and real and very engaging with our audience because you guys are going through these kind of things right now. And so we want to be able to see your comments, hear your questions, and make this as applicable for you guys as we can. Now, some of you guys have been following us for a long time and you know our PATH method and you know that it works and you've seen the client wins in our group and you see the transformations that are happening not only in marriages that were on the brink of divorce or going through multiple affairs, but even in like people's lives that they're learning skills that they've never had before. They're healing some limiting beliefs that have held them back or kept them stuck in cycles for a really long time. And so you guys know that. Now, if you have never heard of the PATH process before that we teach here at High Thrive Coaching, then we are gonna give a kind of an overview, but we're gonna go a little bit deeper into things. You know, as Mark and I have been doing this for years and helping thousands and thousands of clients, we learn things all the time. In fact, I would say that we are always the students, never really the masters, but at the same time, we are experts and we've learned a lot of things along the way. So it's kind of like a surgeon, you know, that practices for years and years and years and develops a little bit new technique, learns some new insights because we've helped so many people. So we're going to go into a little bit deeper of the PATH process and some things that are going to make it even more valuable. It's not replacing the PATH process, it's just improving it. Would you agree, Mark?
Yeah, exactly. So just like Heather was saying, you may have heard some of this, but we always like adjust it a little bit. I felt like as I was writing some of this up, I was giving it a slightly different flavor here and there, some different stories. So I always think there's something a little bit new to learn, even if you're retreading on some familiar ground. And Yeah.
And it's always so good sometimes just to go back to basics. Sometimes we're looking for like the shiny object syndrome, right? We're always looking for something brand new that's going to be like the magical cure for our situation, for our unhappiness in our marriage, for getting our spouse back. But when it really comes down to it, there are foundational truths that work almost in every single situation. And so we're going to go through how we help clients go from their spouse wants out, they want a divorce, they want separation, you're checked out, they're checked out, there's affairs going on, broken trust, and how we help them go from that place to a place of being happy in their relationship and having it safe and secure and healthy. Before we go into the PATH process though, and the four vital steps, we're going to share our client win. Mark, you wanna share the client win?
Sure. This comes from Eric. So Eric says he had an awesome evening with the lady, is what he, how he puts it. Started as a bad situation, but we turned it around. We enjoyed the eve or evening. Also willing to try it again. All I can say is stay positive, prayers for all out there. So it sounds to me like he and his wife were probably stuck in some patterns, as in they were used to having these blow-up arguments. And so, I mean, he's talking about it starting it as a bad situation, but it sounds like he learned some skills and some ability to take that, slow it down, and turn it around. And, you know, even though this isn't this huge monumental milestone, I do like to, you know, take note of these little wins like this, because these sort of things add up, and all the little sort of wins in a relationship are ultimately what will turn it around. So we like to celebrate these smaller wins as well.
We do. We really have a culture of focusing on what's going right, because the tendency when your life is kind of falling apart, or you're going through the dark night of the soul, you're facing like the worst hellish situation of your life, is to obviously focus on the negative, to focus on the obstacles. And one thing that's really foundational to what we do here is to focus on what's going right and to celebrate the baby steps along the way instead of just the peak of the mountaintop, right? I just posted in our own personal company page about, you know, a client whose spouse just put on a wedding ring, right? And says he's coming back and wants to fully restore the marriage. And we have so many of those. But we also like to focus on these little steps along the way, because they're the things that lead to those kind of mountaintop results that we always want, right? And it's really important to understand that we don't just go from 0 to 60. We don't just go from the base of the mountain to the peak in one leap. It is a process. So speaking of process, let's go into the path process that we have here, the four vital steps. So PATH always starts an acronym, right? First one starts with perspective. So when we're talking about why is it so important to have perspective at the beginning of restoring your marriage, what do we really mean by perspective, Mark?
So I will see situations where someone comes in, they say, my spouse is leaving me and I have no idea why. Or they'll come and say, my spouse is considering leaving and I don't get it. They're the one that's doing everything wrong. Or, you know, any number of other scenarios like this. And, you know, almost invariably, there needs to be more understanding, but also more acceptance of the problems that exist. And I say that because, you know, in cases like, let's pretend there's an affair, or there's the partner is doing something quote unquote wrong, there needs to be a better perspective, better acceptance of those situations and why they're happening, and not just, you know, go into this and say, hey, here's a bunch of problems. And I think that's sometimes a little bit difficult to do when you're right there in the thick of things. When you're in the middle of the problem, for you, for a lot of people, to slow down and say, okay, well, why is this happening? You know, why are we overreacting? Why has it gotten to the point where people are considering leaving? And if you can't take the time to examine the situation, you're not going to really get anywhere. I do see some other, I'll call them experts, about, you know, some out there are good. I will admit that. But there's some that, like, want to teach you certain tricks to get your ex back, like maybe playing hard to get or doing other sort of maneuvers like this. And it really, the way I look at those sort of things, it's exactly how I described them. They're these tricks. They're short-term things that aren't really going to create a healthy foundation and actually, you know, create a situation where your spouse would actually genuinely want to come back. So I think, you know, if you're going to start actually solving problems and fixing things and creating a situation your spouse wants to come back to, you need to start here.
Right. So one thing that's really foundational here is like your spouse always has a story, right? Mark mm-hmm. mentioned several of the stories that we hear very often. You know, you won't change. I'm not happy here. I love you, but I'm not in love with you. I can never trust you again. Once trust is broken, it's over. Or you don't meet my needs, on and on and on and on. And one of the first things that we help our clients with is identify what their story is, right? What are the reasons justifying why they want out of the relationship? But knowing that that story is the surface level, right? And we don't want to just put a Band-Aid on it. We don't want to just do some like mind manipulation or some psychological like technique to try to get them back. We want to make sure that we heal what's going on underneath the surface, and then they naturally want to come back to us. And one of the first things that we always do, it is the first thing we always do with our clients, is a root assessment. And we uncover the deeper beliefs and perspectives that your spouse has that is causing them to say or do what they're doing. So instead of just focusing on the surface level, we want to uncover what the three, sometimes four of those really deeper issues are. And the kicker is, Mark, right, is that most people know or can guess what some of them are, but there's always at least one or two of these kind of deeper issues that we're just not aware of. And so because we're not aware of them, we have no idea how to really solve them. And it really takes that outside expert view to diagnose exactly what's going on, so then we can solve it in a way that isn't going to backfire. When we don't really know what's going on, we tend to scramble, right, Mark? We see a lot of people that are putting forth a ton of effort, thinking that they're doing the right things to draw their spouse back, and then they're wondering why it's not working. And when we really sit down with them, we realize that what they're doing isn't actually what's needed to solve those root issues. So that's why we always start with helping you get that perspective. And when you get that perspective, what happens, Mark, when a client actually gets perspective into those underlying root issues?
Well, what I tend to see happen is communication starts to open up, because the spouse who was feeling misunderstood and perhaps rejected and all of that, here now we start to create a situation where they actually are feeling heard. And our clients are listening to their spouse. And so we tend to get more information. A lot of things open up, communication starts to open up, and the relationship tends to feel a little bit more comfortable, even if they're not, you know, back together yet at that point.
Yeah.
So one thought here, even though I look at relationships and all this stuff pretty much every day, I'm not immune to these sort of things. I found this really interesting. I'm very transparent here. So my wife Jen and I are seeing a relationship coach. We wanted to actually make things even better. I think we have a great relationship. We just want to make things even better. And you know what? I kind of realized that we were not having quite the right perspective. We noticed that Jen and I were avoiding certain conversations. And it turned out, you know, a large part of that is, you know, maybe I wouldn't bring something up because I didn't want Jen to feel offended, or I didn't want to hurt her feelings. And so we kind of avoided some of these harder feelings with each other. And this, the point of this is, you know, so even this is just even last night, Jen and I had a really hard discussion. And afterward, you know, I was like, hey, we just really needed to have that discussion. And because we were very open about it, because we listened to each other very well, it was difficult, but I think, you know, it means that there's a whole lot more open on the other end. And that's kind of what we do here. It's like, okay, let's actually have these more difficult discussions with all of you, and let's open things up a little bit.
Right. And what tends to happen is that we go from total misunderstanding. I do this. This happens with my husband, Ben. It just happened again this week. We had, you know, I was trying to plan summer vacations. I was like, let's go camping here. And then what about seeing your family? And do you want to go mountain biking? And do you want to do this? And he was like, I just want to relax, you know? And to me, my immediate interpretation is he doesn't care. I'm not interesting to him. He'd rather be on his phone. And what's really exciting and fun to me just overwhelms him. And I'm overwhelming to him and he doesn't really like talking to me, right? And so when we uncovered those layers and I pulled back from my own immediate, like kind of instinctual misinterpretation, realized what's actually going on for him, he had to think about it some. Then I was able to see where he's really coming from. He was really worried about so much paid time off and taking time off of work. And he was feeling insecure about, you know, how am I going to do all these things Heather wants to do and still provide for my family? So it wasn't that he didn't want to talk to me. It wasn't that it wasn't exciting or fun to him or that he didn't appreciate that I was trying to think about what he wanted to do. It was simply he was feeling a little insecure by, you know, wanting to provide for our family while still helping meet my maybe excessive need for adventure. And so when I really understood where he was coming from and he understood where I was coming from, then we're like, okay, how can we do this in a way that still makes you feel secure? I'm definitely not wanting to threaten your need for security and making sure that, you know, we don't take off too much time so that you still feel secure. And when I understood that, then I was like, oh, Heather, you made up this whole big story that was not true. So here is just a microcosm in a healthy, thriving marriage that Ben and I have, which, you know, truly is amazing, but we do stumble into this. And so how much more does this happen when things are on the rocks, right? When things are tense, when there's blame and there's criticism, there's judgment, we immediately put up walls and we often misjudge each other. So we take that judgment, that blame, that criticism, we take it out of the picture. Woo, things really change. And we've seen our clients really change here. It shifts from this negative, volatile, cold kind of communication, closed off communication, to what we call neutral communication with a lot of respect, understanding. And that starts to help build a bridge that we can then cross to go to the next level.
So I actually, in terms of the next step, I wanted to give it a different flavor here. You know, in our PATH method, we talk about A as an action. I wanted to include the word accountability here. Still an A word. funny how that fits. But I think if you are looking for really vital things to turn your marriage around, accountability is a big one. And, you know, I think a good place to start is with yourself. I do hear a lot. Clients coming in, they're like, my husband is out there doing that over there. Or my wife, can you believe what she's doing to me? And that's not going to be a scenario where they're going to want to come running back when you're saying, look at what you're doing to me. So I do think that it's good to start, you know, in terms of accountability, taking in an inventory of what you are responsible for within your own marriage. Now, I'm not saying at all that your partner is blameless and that, you know, we don't need to be concerned about what they're doing. I'm going to get to that in a second. But, you know, if you are just trying to put this together on your own, you need to focus on what you can actually affect. And if you're saying, well, the one thing that I need to do to fix my marriage is to stop my partner's affair, you have very little control over that directly. And you're just going to end up being frustrated with this. So take inventory of what you are responsible for within your own marriage. And if you say that you're not responsible for anything, you're wrong. I'm sorry, you are just wrong. I'm not, once again, I want to make this clear. I'm not blaming people who have been cheated on. I'm not blaming them for affairs, but there are things that you can take responsibility for to make a shift. So with that said, I do think that in terms of looking towards your partner, something that's helpful is, you know, don't shift blame. You know, I'm not saying like, let's shift blame away from the affair or anything, or let's, you know, in trying to take responsibility, don't try to shift that blame elsewhere, but do let some of the responsibilities go. If you're saying, well, the one thing that needs to happen is my partner needs to end their affair, and your partner's not listening to you, you can let go of that control there a little bit. There may be some things in here that are absolutely not your responsibility. I see this quite a lot. You know, it's this nice balance. And I'm going to keep using the example of an affair because that's a common issue within our group. And I'll see people go, you know, swing one way and they'll say, okay, I'm going to take some accountability. You know what? Maybe I wasn't kind enough to my partner. And maybe I was a little bit too controlling. And that's why they're doing the affair. And that, you know, I think you're now swinging all the way. You're swinging much too far in that direction and taking responsibility for your partner's choices. Sure, you might be able to take responsibility for being too controlling. You might be able to take responsibility for, you know, being very negative and critical. Take responsibility for those, but, you know, don't take responsibility for your partner's choices. And it's this balance that I think is really important as you are starting to take action. That's why I shifted a little bit from action to accountability, but they're both really, really linked. Because if you're going to start taking accountability, you got to start doing things. Heather, you look like you have something you want to say on that.
Oh, I was just so agreeing. Right. Well, just think about times in your life, right? When you finally owned your part in what was happening in your life. And sometimes we're just so stuck in these negative cycles and we keep experiencing really hard things, right? For me, it was holding on to so much bitterness and pain that my body was had cancer and was going to die, right? So pretty extreme example, but it shows that like sometimes we get so caught up in it, we don't even realize how we're creating some of these things. And I had to take a moment to be like, am I a victim here? What part am I doing that's bringing this about in my life? And when you finally ask yourself those questions, I'm like, you know, right here in my heart, I have so much pain and I have so much bitterness and I've had it for years. And I know I'm supposed to forgive. I know I'm supposed to let go. I don't know how to do it. And I just knew, like in the core of my being, that unless I took responsibility for my part in the creation of this hell, that it was going to continue. And in my case, it was not going to end well. And so that led to some radical acceptance, some radical accountability. I wouldn't even say radical though, because it just was what it was. Like I needed to own the fact that I was not forgiving, that I was not moving on from this. And then when I finally did, it led to action, because you can't help but say, this is my part. And now what am I going to do? Am I just going to allow it to continue? Sometimes we struggle back and forth, but we do, right? As we're making changes, it doesn't happen overnight, but in the process of changing what we're doing, that's creating that result, we do take those actions. And as we take actions and change those patterns, it's not pretty, it's not perfect, but we do make progress. And so that action then leads to new results, right? I always say, this is not my saying, but when we always do the same thing, we always get the same results. So we need to start doing some new things to get some new results. Yeah, we got a question here really quick. Can I
show you another question? Yeah,
sure. I think this will apply to what we're talking about right here.
Oh yeah, I saw the question earlier and I was like, oh, we'll get back to this when it's actually applicable, but it's right now. So you're right.
Yeah. So thanks Kaylee for putting this in the group here. She asks, how do you change someone's story when the other woman is in his head and he basically won't even come around anymore or speak to me so she doesn't get mad? Lord knows I'm trying to be everything he wants to come back to.
That's a good question. And there's so much kind of like this exploring of accountability and action in this paragraph. You know, there's all this, like I'm trying to take responsibility for his affair. And you know, there's a healthy side to that and an unhealthy side to that. Like there's the healthy side and we're saying, hey, I'm trying to be healthy and I'm trying to make some changes and shifts in my life and I'm trying to be a better person. And then the unhealthy side is kind of this like, well, I'm making these changes. Why isn't he coming back? You know, is there something that I'm doing wrong? And honestly, I think that kind of desperation, you know, I don't you know, it's hard to read into tone with just some words, but I kind of hear this underlying desperation there. I don't know if...
Lord knows I'm trying to be everything he wants to come back to. The bottom line is we can't be everything. And we can't, like, try to become something that's somehow magically going to make him come back, because we don't have control over him coming back. And so I sense a lot of desperation there as well. And you're not alone. A lot of people feel that. And a lot of people, like, say, I'm going to do all these things. I'm going to bring her flowers every day. I'm going to send him 5 text messages. I'm going to remind him of our vows. I'm going to, you know, just kind of be a rug, and he's going to walk all over me just so I can get him back. And I'm going to, like, try to be better than the other woman or whatever. And all of that just leads to a lot of frustration. That desperation, your spouse senses it. You sense it. It doesn't feel safe to you. It doesn't feel appealing either, or attractive to your spouse. When someone's super desperate, it does backfire. So what we want to do instead, right, is to demonstrate some accountability for our part, to demonstrate some real change, to demonstrate some real action that's going to lead to them naturally wanting to come back to us, but even more importantly, us feeling a lot more peace, a lot more actual empowerment rather than desperation and frustration. Does that make sense?
I'm thinking like a story here with a client of mine. So I'm thinking of the situation where the wife who's the client, she openly admits that she was driving her husband away and was being very suspicious and untrusting and critical. And so this caused a big rift in their marriage, and the husband was just kind of on the fence and back and forth. He ended up separating and moving out. So I ended up at some point talking to him. He was willing to talk to me a couple times. And what he expressed to me is, he said, you know, I recognize my wife has made changes, but I just can't let go of how she treated me, which, you know, in my opinion, wasn't absolutely terrible. And this is the thing, like, if he had kept meeting with me, where I would have taken that is I would have said, okay, this is something that, you know, where we really do need to divide these responsibilities. He really needed to take responsibility for his own emotions there and let go of, let go of a lot of that blame that would go back into the perspective. But, you know, with her, as I've been speaking with her, I do think that a big portion of how she's going to move forward is holding him responsible for his own feelings. I think she's taken a lot of responsibility, and she tries to placate this and she tries to make it better. And we're starting to make that shift where she's now saying, okay, hold on. I'm actually not responsible for him feeling hurt still. And he needs to, and so she's standing up for herself. And this is all about that demonstrating change and having accountability and having action. Sometimes it is about, I'm going to be confident, I'm going to stand up for myself, I'm going to create those boundaries, and I'm going to be the better person and make the changes for myself so that I'm actually more attractive. It's that, both sides of it. James, you said you just joined, wondering if we're taking questions. Yeah, you can put questions into the chat there or into the comments. If it's applicable to what we're talking about, we usually address them.
Yeah, and if we can't get to it live in the podcast, then we always answer you guys in the group. We see all your comments and love the group because you guys are so engaged with each other and reaching out, which is awesome. So anything else about this second step here of accountability? So really what happens is we start to make some of those root changes in us that empower us and at the same time help draw our spouse to us in a natural way. There's a reason why they were attracted to you initially, right? And there's going to be most likely, and you know, we'd say like most cases, probably 90-95% of cases, there's things that you can do that will be that will be attractive to your spouse, but not in the gimmicky kind of way we're talking about earlier, in a genuine way, because it's all about genuine change and genuine healing. Now, this third step here goes back to their story, right? We're all about changing that story that they have about you. So for a moment here, recall the story, I'm sure it's not too hard to recall, of why your spouse wants out. What are the reasons justifying what they're doing, right? We've already gone through how we need to get perspective on the underlying issues there, and then how we need to take some accountability for our part. And now we need to help them let that story go and see a new story about us and about the marriage. And we need to tell a new story. So T in the PATH process is tell a new story. Mark, what do we see? Like, what are some common mistakes that people make at this stage? What are some things that they must do instead to really have success here? Because now we've usually shifted the communication from like really negative or really volatile, blaming. And if we've gone through the first two milestones, now things are more neutral. There's a lot more respect, but they're still holding on to a bit of resistance to coming back to mm-hmm. us, right?
Yeah, so I think it's helpful to explain what we mean by stories a little bit. So a big part of this is just in the difference between facts and stories. And I believe that we all tell stories about what is happening all around us constantly, all the time. We see that little look that our spouse gives us and we're like, okay, they're mad at me because of whatever. And, or, you know, we might, be at the grocery store and maybe the cashier doesn't greet you quite as enthusiastically. And like, you know, I often don't think of, I don't create stories much around the cashier, but maybe we say something about that, but we do this all the time. I think even myself, well, I know myself, I tell stories about what's going on in my own relationship, and it's not always factual. It's, you know, I might, just like I was saying earlier, Jen and I had a hard conversation. Earlier in the day, we were kind of like, we were really entrenched in these stories, and I was thinking, okay, Jen isn't listening to me, and Jen doesn't get what's going on, and, you know, things like that. I was telling stories to myself based off of what I was seeing. And when I finally, you know, slowed things down and we got to talking a little bit more, we got to understand the other person. We got a little bit closer to the facts that, okay, you know, part of it was we hadn't slept well, and part of it that we hadn't taken care of eating much that day, and, you know, all sorts of other things like that going on. But we all do this. And the thing is that we can choose the kind of stories that we want to tell to ourselves, to other people. So, you know, to turn that situation around the other day, I started telling myself, okay, Jen is acting the way she is because, you know, instead of not listening to me, Jen very likely wants to feel a little bit more secure. She's feeling a little bit worn down. She's feeling a little bit stressed. I shifted the story into a situation where I could feel more empathy for Jen, instead of Jen isn't really caring, isn't listening, isn't whatever it happens to be. And we all have the ability to choose this. And I have the belief that we also have the ability to influence others' stories as well. And that's what we try to do here with all of this, is make sure that you yourself have a good, healthy story, and then you can kind of extend that out and influence your partner's story. Heather, you're familiar with our thing. We talk about home messages sometime, right?
Right.
So this is kind of a little concept that I came up with. It's, you know, a home message. It's basically an affirmation for other people that's backed with proof or action. And I call it a home message because you keep coming back to it frequently and you need to be consistent about it. You know, you come home and it's nice and cozy and warm, and we want to kind of have those kind of messages for your partner. So if your partner is really upset because you've been too controlling, you might want to influence that story and say, hey, it's really important to me now that I respect your choices. I want to make sure that I'm supporting you in this choice. You might say, you know, things like, and you might have that message over and over again, or you might have other messages of really trusting your partner and not being controlling, and you demonstrate it and you support it and you offer that proof over and over again. By doing this, you can, you're basically extinguishing this negative story that your partner might hold. There's no foundation anymore, no proof to say, Bill is controlling. He never respects he never respects my choices. Well, if you keep saying, hey, I really want to support your choices and I'm doing it by this, that story kind of starts falling apart. And you get away from, like, the reasons for leaving start feeling a little bit more empty. So.
Right.
Yeah.
What are you gonna say? I just want to add one thing here, is that this is why I was drawn to do this work all these years ago. And Mark, we wanted to help people make real change. And it all came down to, sometimes they're called limiting beliefs, or these stories, these perspectives. What's really important to understand is that our brains, like the instinctual part of our brain, its number one job is to protect us. And we develop these stories from childhood throughout all the events of life in a way that is designed to protect the self. And we create these stories, and sometimes they're most actually of the time, like Mark said, they're not true. They are based on our perspectives and the way that the lens that we see the world, but they're designed as like a self-defense mechanism. And when you understand that about yourself, you say, I don't trust people. I don't let people get close to me. I know that I'm not good enough, right? I'm not worthy. I'm not deserving. It'll never work out for me. Bad things always happen. When we have that as a self-defense mechanism, we're doing that to protect us from further pain. If we already expect something bad to happen, then it doesn't feel as bad when it happens. We're already kind of like preparing for the worst case scenario before it comes, right? But the problem is that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And we continue to relive this story inside of us again and again and again. This is a big reason why people who have an affair, research shows, are 3 times more likely to have an affair again. The research also shows that if you've been cheated on, you're 3 times more likely to be cheated on again, because the same story keeps repeating inside of ourselves. And so that's why it's so important we understand the root issues going on inside your spouse, why they've created this story, and give them some compassion, give them some grace, that this is a defense mechanism that they put up inside themselves to help them feel safe, or to help them feel protected against their own sense of judgment and blame and shame, because they don't want to feel that about what they're doing. And so they create this story that helps them not have to feel those negative emotions. So give them some grace, and also give yourself some grace that you have stories as well, defense mechanisms that you've put up to try to help yourself feel safe. What we must do is show our brain it's okay to let this story go, because you're going to be safe with a new empowering belief, actually a true belief, right? That I am good enough. I am worthy. I can trust people. I deserve love. Good things happen to me. And you can do that in a way that tells the brain it's okay to let this go now, because we're safe, we're secure. And then as you have that new belief, you start to see the new results. And we help your spouse do that as well. We can't control them or make them, but like Mark said, we do what we need to do to influence them to let that defense mechanism go, and show them it's okay to come back. You're safe here with me. You're secure. You can be happy here. We can love each other, and we can have that connection. So that's what really happens in this stage. This is such a high level overview. It's hard to like get it all in, mm-hmm. But this is what happens in this process. And you will be so free. You will be so free, and so much more peace and joy in your life when you let those stories about yourself go. And the first step is to start with you. And then we work on helping your spouse let their story go as well. And again, you're going to have that safety, that security, that peace, and that genuine connection, because the root issues have now been healed and the brain is okay, feels safe to let the defense mechanism go. All right, which then leads us to our next step, our final step in PATH, which is hope. And this has a lot to do with mindset and confidence. I'm going to preface this with saying there's a big mistake a lot of people make at this very last stage, where now you've let the stories go. You have usually a lot of compassion and understanding. Our clients are able to talk about almost anything. Like we just saw in the win right up here from Eric, that they had a great night talking about things, you know, and going deep, and that's a huge win. What happens here, and a big mistake a lot of people make, is that they think they're done. They think, oh, we're friends now, we have respect now, I understand their needs, they understand mine, and there's a lot of comfort that is created in these earlier stages. And then they think they're done, but they're not done yet, and they tend to push too soon for a full reconciliation, and it backfires because you're not done yet. We have this last step. If your spouse is saying, you know, I want to be friends, you get kind of stuck in the friend stage. They might say, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. And so we need this last step to fully let the story completely go and overcome the friend stage to get into the romance stage. And that's why you really have to have this hope, this mindset, this confidence. So Mark, so to help people avoid the mistake of thinking that they're done and pushing too soon, how, what kind of things do we need to see happen in this stage?
Well, I do see a lot of people who are in this situation, and there still is desperation in just what's going on. And the thing is, no one is really going to want to come back to that sad, upset, scared wreck of a person. Quite frequently, the person who's leaving sees some sort of solution away from the marriage. They say, okay, this over here is going to fix my life. If I go and do this, if I go and pursue this affair or the separation or the divorce, things will be better. And that's really what you're fighting against. You're not fighting against, like, okay, can I get rid of problems? You're fighting against what they perceive is a better situation. And so if you are just presenting an absence of problems, you're not going far enough. And so what you really need to do is you have to be healthy, happy, confident. It means that you really kind of have to develop some amount of acceptance with where you are at right now. Even though, like, your marriage might be on the rocks, even though they might be separated from you, even though there might be problems, you got to be kind of okay with that. Now I'm going to say something, in that I say this, and then a lot of people counter it with, well, I can hide my emotions really well. My partner doesn't know how sad I am or desperate that I'm feeling.
Marriage myth buster.
Heather, how well do those sort of situations, how well do you think those hold up?
Right. That's just a lie to yourself, right? People that are close to you, you might think, oh, they can't tell when I'm upset. I'm really good at masking my emotions, just like you said. But the reality is that you're fooling yourself, and they can tell, because we are so much more in tune with each other than we probably want to admit, because it's scary to know how in tune people are with us. You know, they might not be able to tell exactly why you're feeling insecure about the relationship, where your desperation might be coming from, or your closed offness, right? They might not be able to tell exactly what you're feeling. They're going to know something's off, though. They're going to sense kind of the fakiness. They're going to sense the over-trying, and they'll know that there's something going on.
You know, it's kind of like that situation. I don't know if you've ever asked your husband or wife or whoever, like, how are you doing? They're like, fine. And it's just, you know, like the tone and the body language, it all kind of plays in. And you know, you really, really know they're not fine.
Right. Or the, oh, I'm great, everything's blah, 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 blah. You know, they're like trying so hard. You can just feel the fakiness of it. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I get exactly what you mean. And I'll catch Jen on that sometimes, where she's trying to overcompensate and act happy. But I know better. I know something's off. And I like you're saying, I don't, and you know, even though I'm really good at reading people, I think, I still don't know exactly what's going on, but I know something's off. And if you're saying I can mask my emotions well and they can't tell that I'm a wreck inside, you're just wrong. So the solution here is not about masking your emotions. The solution here is coming to this point where you are just okay. You've come to this point of acceptance that right now, no matter what the outcome, I'm going to be fine. And until you come to that point, you're still going to come across upset, angry, desperate, insecure, all of that. A thing I frequently tell clients is I say, okay, you're going to go live an amazing life. And, you know, if your partner wants to join you, then great. That's the kind of situation that you want to be in, because that's very likely why they wanted to be with you in the first place. You were this awesome person and they wanted to be close to you because you were awesome.
You weren't trying to be awesome. You just were. It was like stripping away all the gunk that's built up until this point. And it's hard to put in words, but I hope that anyone who's listening can really just sink into this. There's an incredible shift that happens when our clients decide, I'm going to be happy no matter what. And you take the pressure off of you, you take the pressure off the marriage, you take the pressure off your spouse, and you get to a place of just internal calm, because you know that that's the only place where it comes from. And our clients aren't looking for some external thing to make them happy anymore. They aren't looking for their spouse to change or to stop doing this or to start doing this, because that's putting all your happiness on something you can't control, which is very disempowering. Instead, it's saying everything that I really want is already inside me. And no matter what happens in life, I'm going to be okay, because I know how to find that peace, that security, that happiness, that gratitude, that joy. And I've said it many times, but I can't help but say it again. It's like becoming a rock in a storm. That's how one of our clients put it. His marriage was not saved, but he completely transformed as a person because he learned to find that inside himself. And now he has an incredible, blissful new relationship that meets him where he's now at. And he's so grateful that he was able to learn how to let go of that need to try to control things on the exterior world that we do not have any control over. Guys, it's like being in a hurricane and being like, I'm going to stop the wind. This tree's not going to smash me. And the rainbows need to come so I can feel peaceful, right? It just doesn't happen. We do not have that much control. Instead, saying like, I am a rock inside myself and I cannot be moved because this is who I am. This is what I want, and this is how I choose to live my life. And when you get to that kind of place, which is where we always strive to help you reach, it's a choice you have to make though at the end of the day. When you're there, that's when you have that peace and that confidence. You accept where you are while still expecting and moving towards something more, which is kind of an interesting phenomenon. But it's true. It's like, I'm okay where I am. I'm okay regardless of the outcome. And yet I still desire more. I still desire this thriving, beautiful, blissful relationship. And you have this quiet confidence. I know it's going to happen. And it doesn't even matter when, because I feel so okay in myself right now. And that's the magic. That's when it happens. It's kind of like when we let it go, we create space for it to come to us. And we've seen it happen over and over. Mark, do you have any specific example of why this is so crucial and how big of a difference it actually makes?
I'm thinking of an older client. This would have been probably about a year and a half ago. And she had gotten to a point, her husband had left. She kind of admitted that she had been very negative and very critical and was not in a good place herself, and was taking it out on her husband. And I saw this shift where she went from, I'm making these changes to get my husband back. And that was a good shift. In that she and her husband started spending some time together. They started talking a little bit more. But the better shift came about when she kind of made this realization, when she's like, I just need to be better for myself, just to be happier. I want, you know, and I'm fine if he doesn't come back. You know, I hope that he does, and it was this shift of like, I just need to make changes for myself to be a better person, to be a happier person, is where it really started to shift more into that romantic sort of interactions, where her husband would linger a bit longer, started flirting with her a little bit more, started spending the night just maybe sleeping on the couch, just because it was late and he didn't want to bother with going home. And then it just kept progressing from there. But like that was my point here, is that this is what turns it from like, hey, we're friendly and we can be good buddies, to now I'm really attracted and I actually want to be with this person romantically again. That's what this is about.
Right. And it's so genuine and so real, and it's just incredible. So now, everyone, we have two choices, right? We always have the ability to choose. You can take what we've gone over today, and knowing that this is a high level overview, but you can say, this isn't for me. I just prefer to keep doing what I've always done, and you can do nothing about it. Or you can say, you know, I feel like I need path. I need to do some of these things. I need to get perspective on what's really going on instead of guessing what's going on. I need to get a root assessment to uncover those underlying issues that I'm just not aware of because I can't see it all clearly myself, right? I need to help my spouse tell a new story. I need to take accountability for my part, and I need to get to that place of hope where I know I'm going to be okay no matter what, because when you get to that place, you are the most empowered for yourself, but you're also the most attractive, again, not in a gimmicky way, but that genuine, genuine way. And this is what we've seen our clients go through, to go from a place of misery and frustration and fear and pain and agony to a state of joy and confidence and connection that is so real. So if you guys want more help with this, that's why Mark and I are here, to help you go through this path process. So feel free to book a call with us. We have no charge for our initial call with you. And you can do that at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. That's highthrivecoaching.com/apply. I hate that part. It always sounds like a little bit of a commercial, but I want to be able to give you guys the next step. If you're saying, I need this. Yeah, I'm all in, you know, 100%. I know that something's been missing in my efforts up until now, and I want to have a breakthrough. That's what we're here for. All right. Let's go now, Mark, to our marriage myth buster. And our marriage myth buster is love is enough. Like if all you need is love, which is funny because I do like that song.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really nice idea.
It is a nice idea.
It sounds really great. And you know what? If everything is going okay, then this is just fine. So this idea, I do think it's related to a few things. You know, I think it's related to those claims that you might hear from some people, like, we don't need to get married and it's just a piece of paper. I think it's related to that a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think it is also related to an unwillingness to face difficult situations or to commit fully. As in, I will hear this sort of phrase as a counter to their partner expressing a desire to leave because of serious problems. Like, shouldn't love be enough? Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I might be dealing with addiction, but, you know, we love each other. Shouldn't love be enough? And I think it's kind of related to those sort of things. So this is not like just a one facet myth. It's just, you know, this idea that love can transcend all things and can fix all problems, and you know, it's this constant thing here that's never going to go away, and that's all you need. So I will say this, that love, it's amazing, and it's often what keeps a couple together through thick and thin, but it doesn't trump everything. Love, it waxes and it wanes and it kind of flows and it goes in different places. Now, I will admit, Heather, you know, everyone, there are moments here where I am not 100% madly, deeply in love with my wife. There are moments where I do feel that way, and I'm just like, I can't get enough of her. But, you know, we've all had those moments, I think, where we're just like, you know what, I'm just not madly in love with my spouse right this moment. But the thing is, there are many other factors that keep me absolutely committed to my marriage that aren't about love. You know, don't get me wrong. Jen is amazing. I love her, but there's a lot of things that keep us together beyond that. And I think it makes us stronger. Those factors often keep me acting in loving ways until issues are resolved and we can go back to being madly in love with each other. So a little bit of this is the difference between, you know, personal commitments and structural commitments that we've been talking about a little bit here over the past few weeks. You know, and that love factor is very much one of those personal commitments, but it's, you're going to have a much more stable, a much more secure relationship if you are not solely relying on love by itself. Jen and I have not come to a point where we were completely absent of love and we had to rely on those structural commitments, but it certainly does make things feel a lot more secure. So if, like, she and I are having problems, I still kind of feel this confidence like, hey, this is worth it. We're going to work through these problems. You know, we have all this history. We have our 5 kids. We have all these things that we've overcome together. But those are all factors that are not love. And it kind of really kind of boosts that desire to, you know, work through things even when love might be a little bit less. Love also doesn't trump serious long-term problems. It doesn't. And I feel like this is almost like this desperate plea of someone who's struggling with a problem they can't let go of, like an addiction. Like, can't love be enough? Can't you just accept me with this problem? But the thing is, given enough time, it may not matter how much love there is if a persistent problem repeatedly damages the relationship over and over again. It, you know, given enough gravity or seriousness of a problem and enough repeated offenses, that's going to really, you know, take away from that really binding factor of love. So I guess the takeaway from this MythBuster is, don't assume that because you have many structural commitments like sharing children and time together, that it's enough. You know, I think I worded that wrong. Like, just don't assume that, you know, you don't need those things going well, and just assume that, okay, you know, we can love each other and that's fine enough. You do need to actually get those problems out from under the rug, deal with them. You do need to have those commitments. You do need to have all of that in place if you really want to have a happy, healthy, stable, secure relationship.
Agreed. For me, like, I definitely have loved Ben, and that was never really the issue, right? The issue in our marriage really struggles is that we did not have the skills and the wisdom, right, of how to handle relationship challenges in a healthy manner. And so love alone wasn't solving those things. It didn't show us how to understand one another. It didn't show us how to, you know, deal with, why am I feeling like I don't trust him when you show nothing distrustful except in my own mind, right? All those different things doesn't show us how to bridge those gaps. And so I think when you combine love with healthy relationship skills that aren't really taught but are learned, that's how, you know, that's when the magic happens. That's how we work through these things. So I think that myth is busted. Love is beautiful and it is powerful, but if you love someone enough, then you will learn how to communicate, how to understand, how to problem solve, how to work together as a team, you know, how to overcome the challenges of life, and then your relationship will be that much better and stronger. All right.
Okay.
James, I see your question just came here through at the end. So I'm going to address that over in the Thriving Marriage group. Just as little, yeah. So just as a side note there, I got your question right at the end. So we'll reach out to you. All right. Next week, we're going to share with you all about how to change that narrative. So we went kind of deep into the story or the narrative of what your spouse is saying, why they're justifying what they're doing, but we're going to go even deeper in how to really change that narrative so they want to let it go and want to be with you. So we're going to narrow in a little bit. We gave you kind of a broad overview today. We're going to narrow in a little bit more specifically on the narrative and how to change the story. Awesome. Thank you, Mark, and thanks to everyone for joining. We hope you have a beautiful day and work towards having a happy, thriving marriage.
All right. See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.